I'm Rhea Patel, and today we'll be discussing the faculty cuts in the school district. Today we are joined by Dr. Nathan Hostetler. Dr. Hostetler is the head principal at FHN, and this is his third year at North. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Could you explain the reason for the district cuts and like why they're happening?
So essentially, it's a financial decision. We've been running a bit of a deficit here for a little bit. And because of the reduction in tax income for the state and for feds, then we find ourselves at an even deeper deficit than we had been previously. And at some point, we just have to make some financial corrections to be able to move forward.
How many cuts will there be district-wide?
I believe we started with 67. However, based on some federal funding that came through, we were able to reduce that number to 47.
So of those, how many of those will be at North?
We don't have a precise number just yet. We're still sort of working through exactly what that will look like. Essentially, our decisions at all three high schools and all the buildings are driven by student need, what we need to be able to meet the students' course requests, their schedules, and we are still... Have you done your individual advisement yet with your counselor?
I believe so.
So as we work through that individual advisement process and we're sorting out exactly what kids, our students' course requests are, then we're able to sort of identify exactly what our needs are going to be and we'll adjust accordingly.
Do you know how they decided who's going to get cut and who won't?
So the way this will work, it's again based on student need. We're going to have, there are 1,700 students and there are 7 classes. So we're going to have somewhere in the neighborhood of 12,000 course requests. And then we'll divide those course requests up into really how we need to space out our different staffing. So we may need more English and less math or vice versa. We have to just kind of see what that looks like.
Had COVID not happened, do you think the cuts would have happened or like there would have been as many?
COVID pretty significantly impacted state income, and that state income then is how we receive part of our funding. And so, for example, over the last 2 fiscal years, we've lost roughly $10 million. So $10 million has an impact. That's 5% of our total operating budget. I don't know exactly what it would look like if COVID hadn't have happened, but I would imagine that it has been impactful.
Can you like briefly explain the budget for viewers who might not know and how the cuts would affect the budget?
So Francis Howell School District has an operating budget, yours makes no difference, of roughly $200 million per year. That money is used to cover everything from salaries to HVAC and utilities to busing, everything that takes place in curriculum, textbooks, all the things. Essentially, 80 to 85% of that total budget, of that $200 million, is used for staffing. So that pays salaries. And that's actually all districts spend most of their money on staffing. So then when there are cuts, then that's one of the first places districts have to look. If there's drop in funding, then that's one of the first places to look because it's the largest overall budgetary item. And then I know there are a lot of people asking questions like, how can we build a new building while we're making staffing cuts? So we talked a little bit earlier about how we've seen a decrease in revenue or how we levy taxes. Those taxes are paid every year. That's our income. A bond issue is used to pay for large items like buildings, sometimes school buses, things like that. The way that works is the voters, your parents, for example, agree to say, yes, you should issue these bonds. And then that essentially becomes a loan. So essentially, we took out a mortgage to build a new building, and that's completely separate funding from our regular income. So it is actually illegal to use any of the bond money to pay for salaries, and it is it's not illegal, but it's highly problematic to use any of the salary money to pay for bond items. So they are totally, totally separate things.
Okay. How do you think that these faculty cuts would affect North?
It's going to increase our average class size, for sure. My job is to make sure that it doesn't negatively impact, like that it doesn't do away with any of our programs, that it doesn't negatively impact your experience as a student as best I can. Like I said, class sizes are going to change. We're going to have some discussions about what classes make, like what we're able to offer and what classes don't. But my job is to try to make your experience as a student be minimally impacted by these decisions. I can't guarantee that we're going to be able to make everything go away, but certainly we can find ways to minimize it.
Now, so the class sizes are going to like become larger. In the case that COVID's still a thing in the fall, which it's probably likely because everyone would need to get vaccinated.
Agreed.
What would like the effects of COVID be in the back of your mind and like student safety for the larger class sizes?
So here's kind of the way to think of class sizes. Class size varies a lot, even like any given year. Some of your classes are going to be big, some are going to be small. It's just kind of the way a schedule works. So what we look at is the total number of students per faculty member. What's going to happen is that number is going to go up a little bit. So some classes are probably going to be about the same size. Others will be a little bit bigger. What will actually be most impactful on class size is how many students choose to learn virtually. So for the first semester, roughly 400 and a few chose to learn virtually. For second semester, it's closer to 350 or so. So we had roughly 100 students come back to the building. So that means that class sizes did in fact go up a little bit this semester, at least for in-person learning. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So if we start talking about losing, say, just random number, a half dozen teachers, that will have an impact on class size. But if we start talking about adding back 200 learners, that has a big impact on class size as well. With that being said, social distancing is potentially a concern with that. So that's something we're going to have to process through and think through. We're going to try to mitigate that risk to the greatest degree possible. I agree with you that COVID will still be a thing in the fall. I'm hopeful at that point that there are enough vaccinations that a big part of the spread has really declined. I'm hopeful.
What classes are likely to get cut, like more so elective classes versus core classes?
So that's sort of a double-edged sword. I'm going to give you an answer that isn't really an answer. So here's the thing. Think of an English department. Our English department has 13 members. So if we cut one member of the English department, they only lose about 7% of their total manpower. On the other hand, if we look at vocal music, we have one choir teacher. So if we cut one choir teacher, we lose 100% of our manpower. With that being said, students have to have English to graduate. So we don't want to reduce that. Students don't need choir to graduate. So we potentially could reduce that without impacting graduation rate or those class sizes. But by the same token, I don't want to necessarily walk away from vocal music. That's a terrible plan. So there's sort of a balance that has to be struck. So large departments can afford to lose personnel. However, that also means that the classes that everybody has to take go up in size. So it's really going to be a balancing act, and it's very much going to be driven by student request. That's why those individual advisement sessions with your counselors are so important.
So these are some questions from students.
Okay.
Was there a certain number of teacher per subject that would like get cut? So like certain number of people in English department, certain number of people in science department.
Nope. And I don't think that number is going to be so large that we're even going to have to cut every department.
Why were the other options not chosen? Like there were options for like a 4-day work week and like a reduction of transportation. So like, why were they not chosen or at least incorporated into the final plan?
So the 4-day work week is something that we are that we have looked at some, but not researched probably really, really thoroughly. A part of that is because that kind of change takes a lot of prep time. You right now, you're old enough that you can stay home alone. You can take care of classes. You can do your things. I have two sons who are 7 years old. Well, they can't be at home alone all day on a Friday. That's not going to work. There's some significant considerations in terms of childcare that need to be taken care of. There's some significant conversations with the community that need to be taken care of. It also changes the length of the school day. And so part of the issue with that, like right now we have three sets of busing routes, like three different start times. We start at 7:20. Some of the middles start at like, 8:10 or something like that. And then the elementary start at about 9. Well, if we start extending that school day, the elementaries right now don't get out until 4 p.m. So then do they get out at 5:30? Like that's a late day. So there's a lot of things that have to be processed through. And it's not just it's not a thing where you can just throw a switch and make it happen. Reducing transportation potentially could make a difference. The other thing to bear in mind is that when we start talking about 80 to 85% of our total budget being in personnel, that means only 15% exists in other categories. And so really, that's the best bet for really reducing expenses.
What was the driving factor for laying off certain staffs?
So really, it is very much going to be about student request, like student course needs. And those aren't going to be finalized until, this is the 12th. So I would anticipate about a week and a half from now, maybe. And it's just we have 1,700 kids. We've got to talk to every single one of them and find out what their needs are. And so that's what we're in the process of doing. All seven counselors are just going like crazy to get that done.
So are there any plans to offer jobs to teachers that are getting cut? Or like once funding's back, will those teachers get their jobs back?
So the tough thing about the idea of giving people their jobs back is like if the funding comes back in 2 or 3 years, those people who lost jobs will not have been just waiting. They will have gone and gotten other jobs. So What we've tried to do is kind of put things together in such a way that, like, for instance, if a teacher retires, rather than cutting somebody, we just don't replace that teacher. And so we're able to save some jobs that way. We still end up with a reduced number of faculty, but we don't have to let anybody go. They've chosen to leave. So we're also working to try to find ways to place as many people who potentially are reduced out of one building into another where they can meet other needs. So we're trying to be really efficient about the way we do this so that we have to send as few people away as possible.
Someone asked what would happen to all the empty classrooms.
So some we would be able to utilize, others would probably sit empty. One of the things that you probably don't necessarily see regularly, but very much happens, is we have classrooms that are used as sort of like multiple teachers will use the same classroom throughout the day. For instance, we have a Spanish teacher who comes in from a middle school for 1 hour right now. Well, she needs a room. We have a gifted teacher that comes in for 1 hour a day, so she needs a room. We have physical therapists that needs a room. There will be ways to utilize some of those rooms. We're actually a little bit tight on room right now. I don't know that we'll use every single empty room, but we'll use rooms.
Okay. Someone asked, why not just decrease the pay?
That's a good question. Or freeze the pay. That's another possibility. And I don't know if that'll happen or not. So here's the way to think of this. The way teachers' pay works is every year you get what's called a step. And I don't know exactly what our step is, but let's say it's $1,000 because that's a really easy number to work with. So it's $1,000 to give every teacher a step. And usually this kind of equal, you can imagine with, I don't know, 1,500 teachers or so, giving everybody $1,000 costs you about $1.5 million. So your cost goes up $1.5 million every single year. But there are teachers who retire, and those teachers, because they've been here for so long, are the highest paid teachers. And then in the meantime, we're hiring younger teachers who don't make as much. So that $1.5 million gets kind of reduced back down a little bit. So there's sort of a shift that happens with giving a step. That's the other thing that can happen is an actual outright raise in the pay scale. So the steps are important in just keeping people at work. Increases in the pay scale are important in attracting people to work for us. So the thing is, like, we are competing with Zumwalt and Rockwood and Wentzville and all of the people to offer the best benefits. And so what we don't want to do is start falling behind in that race, because then we don't attract as many high quality teachers. If there was a possibility that someone who's interested in teaching at Howell could just, you know, drive down into the valley and work for Rockwood and make $5,000 a year or more, well, guess where they're going to go. And so we don't want to put ourselves in a position where we struggle to hire high quality teachers, or a position where teachers are regularly leaving us to go work for a Rockwood because they can make $5,000 a year more. So it's a big balancing act.
Are all the schools getting teacher cuts, or, like, is it mostly at the high school level?
The majority of the cuts are at the high school. Then there's some at the middle and elementary. Elementary is experiencing some reductions, but in terms of personnel, they're different than a high school. An elementary, like a third grade teacher, can also teach kindergarten, first, second, fourth, fifth, and sixth grades, right? But a high school chemistry teacher can't teach English or social studies or math or industrial techs or any of the things. They're much more specialized. So if we have to make reductions in staff, we can't just slide people around in the same way that an elementary can. So they've got a bit of an advantage in sort of covering the issues.
So someone asked where the money from the layoffs will go to.
So really the way this works, all school districts will carry what's called an ending fund balance. And that's the fiscal year, the monetary year, ends on June 30th. The new one starts on July 1st. On July 1st, every district in the state will have roughly 15% of their total operating budget. So for us, that'd be $30 million or more in reserves. And the reason for that is we get most of our money from taxes in January. So we have to be able to cover expenses until we get to January. And so we have to have money in reserve. Like I said, it's about 15% that we need to have available. So because we've been working with a deficit, if we don't correct that, our total ending fund balance has the potential to drop below 15%. And so then, like, we legit have trouble paying our bills. So it's not that the money from reductions is going to go somewhere so much as be used to cover the expenses that we already have. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So when will they be happening? When will the cuts be happening?
So we'll start to make some decisions in the next couple of months about it, precisely where those reductions are going to take place. We'll have everything finalized by April 15th. It's legitimately a process to kind of work through all of these things.
Thank you, Dr. Hostetler, for your time and for explaining everything with the district cuts.
Thank you, Ria. Glad to talk to you.
Thanks for joining us today. Be sure to go to fhntoday.com to check out any of our other content. That's all I've got for today. Goodbye. Thank you.
Thank you.